Avodah Zarah, Perkei, Mishnah Zayin 5-7. There are a bunch of different topics in this Mishnah. The first has to do with a Jew receiving compensation from a Gentile in the form of wine. So ultimately, Yayin Nesach. And since Yayin Nesach is Aser Bahana, the Jew can't receive compensation from or with Yayin Nesach because he can't drink it and he can't sell it on. So what should he do? So the Mishnah is going to say in short, let me say it outside first before we get bogged down with the words. If the Gentile employer attempts to pay the Jewish workers with the Yayin Nesach, the Jewish workers can refuse that. They can say, no, give us something else instead besides wine. And that's not considered like trading it back. That's not considered exchanging it. That's simply saying, we're rejecting this form of payment. We want a different form of payment. So we're not exchanging Yayin Nesach for other value. We're simply not accepting the Yayin Nesach. However, once the Jews have accepted the payment from the Gentiles in the form of wine, so now it became theirs. If once it's theirs, to try to exchange it with a Gentile for other kinds of compensation is not allowed because that exchange would mean you're getting benefit from the Yayin Nesach. Effectively, you're selling or trading the Yayin Nesach for something else of value, and that's forbidden. Says the Mishnah inside, Umanin shel Yisrael, if you have Jewish workers, Sheshilach lehem ovid kochavim chavis shel Yayin Nesach b'scharan, that the Gentile employer, the idolatrous employer, paid their wages with Yayin Nesach, with wine that's forbidden. Mutarim lomar lo, the Jewish workers are within their rights to say, ten lanu es dameha. We reject this payment. No, we're not accepting payment in the form of wine. You have to pay us in the value of the wine. We want cash, or even the cash equivalent, but we're not accepting this payment. Give us a different kind of payment. However, v'im mishe nichnasa l'reshusan asur. But once the Jews have accepted it as payment and they've taken possession of this wine, now they can't try to exchange it for something else of value because that would be getting benefit from the wine. It's tantamount to selling it, which is forbidden. You can't sell, just as you can't drink, you can't sell the wine. It's Aser Bahana, and therefore, once they've accepted it as payment, they're stuck with it. They can't get benefit, they have to throw it into the sea, and that's that. I just want to point out here that the words of the Mishnah are a little misleading, perhaps, because the Mishnah Nichnasa L'Reshusan, it's literally we translate it as once the wine has entered into their domain, which would sound like if the Jews found their backyard one day, the case of wine is payment. Now it's in their reshus, in the domain, and they're stuck. That's not the case. Even if that would happen, and even if you say, yes, a person's domain, like his reshus, his chatser, his property, his acquire on his behalf, it's only for his benefit. And the Jews here don't want to accept this wine, so the fact that it's physically foisted upon them doesn't make it theirs. But once they've accepted its payment, making some kind of legal acquisition of it, and that's what it means here of Nichnasa L'Reshusan, at that point they can't trade it back or try to exchange it. Okay, now the next part of the Mishnah is like really a new topic altogether. It has to do with selling wine to a Gentile. Now, so we're talking Jewish kosher wine that's being sold to a Gentile. The problem is, as soon as the Gentile takes physical possession of the wine, it becomes, you know, Yayin Nesach, and now it's Aser Bahana, and now you can't sell it. So that means that the sale has to happen before or at the same moment as the Gentile, takes possession, not afterwards. Okay? So how are we going to do that? So now, just the mechanics behind Kinyanim. A Kinyan, of course, is a transfer of rights or transfer of ownership, and there are basically two ingredients to a Kinyan. The first is the meeting of the minds, the agreement between the two parties to exchange some rights in exchange for some consideration. So that could be in the context of, you know, first the woman agrees to transfer her marriage rights, and the husband says, the would-be husband says, a future husband will say, Hariyat mikudeshli b'tabat zu, they've agreed that the accepting of this ring now makes her become, you know, betrothed to him, married to him, and she transfers the rights. In which case, when she does the second step, what's called the ma'asa kinyan, the actual act of acquisition, the taking of the ring, so that now affects the transfer of those rights. If you give a woman a ring and she doesn't know it's for the sake of getting married, so then she's not married. Okay, and that's true by buying and selling as well. The act that transfers ownership in terms of merchandise is typically mashicha, physically taking possession of something, like actually, you know, drawing it towards oneself. That applies to Jew and Gentile alike. So if the Jew is selling the bottle of wine to the Gentile, it becomes the Gentile's when he physically takes the wine towards himself. But that assumes that second step, the ma'asa kinyan, the mashicha, is only effective if there was a meeting of the minds before that ma'asa kinyan, where the they've agreed on the price. So they understand that I'm taking your wine and I'm going to be obligated to pay you, you know, $10 for the bottle of wine that I took. So the point of remission, therefore, is as follows. If there's a meeting of the minds, meaning they set the price and the purchaser, the Gentile purchaser, is in agreement regarding the price. So when he takes the wine, it became his, and now he's just obligated to pay. So therefore, it becomes his at the same time he's obligated to pay for it, and therefore the Jew's not selling him Yai Nesach. The Jew was selling him kosher wine, which became Yai Nesach only once there's a written obligation to pay, when the Gentile takes the wine. If, however, they had not had a meeting of the minds, and the Gentile took the wine, so maybe the Gentile is going to say, listen, how much is this? And when he finds out the price, he's going to return it. So the point is that that taking of the wine wasn't a Maaseh Kinyan. It wasn't, didn't effect the transaction yet. And therefore, as soon as the Gentile takes it, it's not yet his, but it does become Yai Nesach, because you got a Gentile now handling the Jewish wine. And therefore, the Jew can't now sell it to him, because now it's become Asur B'Hanah. Okay, that's the gist of the Mishnah. So inside the Mishnah says as follows. Hamocher yeno le'over kuchavim. If a Jew is selling wine to an idolater, pasak ad shlo madad, if they first determine the price prior to the Jew measuring out the wine for the Gentile. Imagine the picture in your imagination has to be that the Jewish merchant has like a large, you know, barrel of wine, and he'll be measuring out with a measuring cup, you know, into the Gentile's, you know, bottle. So he'll scoop out a liter of wine and pour into the Gentile's bottle. So if the price ahead of time, it costs $10 a liter and the Gentile agrees, so as soon as the Gentile has now got the liter of wine in his bottle, that, and he picks it up, he moves it, that's already the Maaseh Kinyan, it becomes his, and he has to pay for it. But, and that will be acceptable, because when he took possession of it, it was still kosher wine, not Yai Nesach. That's the Mishnah says again inside. It says, Pasak ad shalom madad, if they determine the price, the meeting of the minds happened prior to the measuring out of the wine, then damav mutar, and then the compensation, the consideration that the Jewish merchant receives for the wine is permitted. However, madad ad shalo pasak, if first the wine is measured out, now the Gentile has wine in his hand, and he's making it now Yai Nesach, and that wasn't a Maaseh Kinyan, because they hadn't had a meeting of the mind yet, they didn't agree on a price. So then, even if they would later agree on a price, it's too late, because the wine in question already is Yai Nesach, and for Jew to receive payment for Yai Nesach is forbidden, even though it's a Jewish wine, but it's Yai Nesach Jewish wine. And therefore, damav asurin, the consideration, the payment for this wine now would be forbidden. Okay, now the next part of the mission is like a new point here. Typically what's happening is the Jew is taking wine from his container and he's going to, you know, pour it into the Gentile's bottle. But there's something in the middle that's called a mashpech, a funnel. Okay, so you'll pour the wine into the funnel so it doesn't splash on the floor, and then from there into the small flask, the bottle of the Gentile. So now, if there's Yai Nesach at the bottom of the bottle of the Gentile, meaning he's reusing the bottle, and the bottle has wine from before in it, and that wine is the Gentile's wine, therefore it's Yai Nesach. So the way that the halacha looks at it, and this is how we learn this mission over here, is that there's a principle called Nitzok Chibur. Nitzok is a flow of liquid that's not broken. So we say that a flow of liquid that's unbroken is a chibur, connects all the liquid together, such that they're considered to be a tarovus, a mixture. And as we'll see in the next Mishnah, even one drop of Yai Nesach mixed into other kosher wine makes all the wine not kosher. And if you hold that nitzok chibur, if you hold that an unbroken flow of liquid connects everything that's connected to that flow, or at least the one stage worth of it, if you will, I'll explain that maybe later. So then everything, not just in the container, I mean the wine bottle, but up to the mashpech, the funnel itself, all becomes forbidden. And if the mashpech is retaining some of that liquid, let's say, for example, the bottom of the funnel, there is like a rim, and there's some wine contained at the bottom of that rim there, so then even once you finish using the funnel has forbidden liquid on it, and therefore if you would use the funnel a second time to fill up, let's say, a Jew's clean bottle of wine, that bottle of wine also is forbidden because it has at least a tiny bit of forbidden wine that was residual left over on the rim of the funnel. So that's the next stage of the mission here. Let's see it inside. It says as follows. Natal es hamashpech, if the Jewish merchant takes his funnel, umadad l'soch tzlochiso shel over kochavim, and he uses it to measure out and pour in wine from his container into the funnel, and from the funnel into the Gentile's wine bottle. Tzluchis is like a flask. So if the bottle of the Gentile has leftover residual yainesek at the bottom, so as we said before, the whole flow up the bottle and into the funnel all becomes forbidden. If then v'chazer mada l'soch tzlochiso shel Yisrael, if he then goes and measures out a second time using his funnel to fill up the wine bottle of a Jew, im yesh bo akeves yayin, if there's some wine that's been left behind because it's retained by some kind of like rim at the bottom, akev is to hold back, rim at the bottom of the funnel, so then asur, the wine that pours into the Jew's wine bottle is also forbidden because it has at least a little bit of forbidden wine that was left on the funnel, which became forbidden because of nitzok chibur, a connection to the drops of forbidden wine at the bottom of the Gentile's bottle, which was used previously. Okay, that assumes that there was an unbroken flow. However, if hama'are mekliya kli, if one like kind of pours from one container to a separate container, and the pour doesn't have a nitzuk, not an unbroken flow, like it's a splash, but there's no flow that connects the forbidden wine on the one end to the source of wine on the other, then esh'er mimenu mutar, the wine that remains in the container from which the wine was poured, called the upper container, if you will, that remains permitted because there was no nitzuk, no unbroken flow that made a chibur, a connection. Esh'er l'socho, but all of the wine that is now in the, I'll call it the bottom container, the container into which the wine was poured, assuming there even was even just a drop of yain nesach from before, then the whole container and all the wine mixed into it is a sword forbidden because, as we'll see in the next Mishnah, yain nesach forbids even with one drop, a kol shehu, and therefore all the wine in the container, if it's being used again, and the first time it had been used, it had yain nesach in it, all the container into which the wine was poured contains all the contents of that container are forbidden.